Hi, everybody. It's great to be here with all these people interested in public health and especially veterinary public health. I was just curious how many people were veterinarians in the audience. So maybe like a third of people. Great. Okay. I just want to mention that this project, I went to the last shelters the first week in October. I finished processing the samples the end of the second week in October. I entered the data and analyzed and put this together just a few days ago, or right before the deadline to get it in. So it's late-breaking news, maybe. Okay. So, no personal relationships to disclose. I'm going to give you just a little bit of background on the project, talk about Salmonella just briefly, and then the methods, results, conclusions, and if I have time, some discussion and future directions. So my time as a shelter veterinarian really opened my eyes to the fact that shelter workers and the animals are a vulnerable population whose exposure to zoonotic diseases might be greater than the regular population. And the reasons for that are many. Especially, it boils down to the fact that shelter animals come in with unknown medical and behavioral histories, and they're often housed under overcrowded, unclean conditions with little veterinary input, very stressful conditions usually too. They're cared for by staff who are probably undertrained and understaffed. There's not enough veterinary input to diagnose and treat disease. And the people who take care of them are pretty stressed out and burned out and overworked and undertrained. So it's kind of a recipe for infectious disease spread. And Salmonella in companion animals and their environments is not really well known. There's a few published reports, and there's some reports on outbreaks in veterinary clinics and animal shelters. And one such outbreak in a shelter in a western state a few years ago, 49 individuals became ill. 10 were hospitalized, and it turned out to be a Salmonella typhimurium DT-104 multi-drug resistant Salmonella that's been on the rise the last few years. So for all these reasons, I thought it was important to look into this. Why environmental testing for it? Our human infection control counterparts don't lay a lot of emphasis on environmental sampling. I think it's because they don't think it's really important for disease transmission for their patients. And I guess I would contend that our patients are just a little bit different with bodies covered with hair. They rarely bathe. They lick themselves. They eat, sleep, drink, lay in the same environment and the same surface. And so environmental contamination may be more of a problem for them than it is for our human patients in hospitals. So just a little bit about Salmonella enterica, 40,000 cases a year, but because disease is often mild goes unreported, they estimate it's really about 1.4 million cases. 15,000 hospitalizations are estimated, and at least 400 deaths a year are attributed to it. And like most infectious diseases, it's more severe in the young, older, immune compromised. In animals, most mammals, avian species, and reptiles, as you probably know, are susceptible. The same symptoms can occur in animals as they do in humans, can go from carrier state to inapparent infection to severe illness and death. It's an economically important disease in livestock for the food safety aspect of it, so it's been studied quite a bit in poultry operations and beef and dairy, but not a lot has been done with companion animals and Salmonella. So for my study, we identified 60 animal shelters in the state of Colorado and contacted and went to everyone that would let me go. I did a short survey of demographic information and such and collected samples by electrostatic wipe, otherwise known as the Swiffer. And this is a method that we use at our veterinary teaching hospital at Colorado State, and we've been using it for at least 6 years or so. And the reason we do is because we've had outbreaks of Salmonella, we've had nosocomial spread, we've had death of animals, and we've had to shut our hospital down a couple of times. So we've been using it for quite some time, and it's proven to be a very sensitive method to find it in the environment. So samples were collected from July to September, which we'd consider the peak Salmonella season. based on human reports of the disease and animal reports as well. So we wanted to characterize the, find out the higher and lower prevalence or risk areas within animal shelters. So we divided them into these eight categories, and it's really, it comes down to what is known about the animal's behavior and medical history, and the contact that people might have with the animals in these locations. So you would expect there'd be a lot of intake, a lot of contact in intake and exam and treatment areas, and not so much in human areas. And human areas would consist of things like break rooms and restrooms, things like that.
Refrigerators,
yeah. Right, yeah, human refrigerators. We wanted to further characterize these locations by the predominant species of animal that was in them. So some of them might be just dogs that were in this ward or cats that were in this isolation unit. A lot of shelters, especially smaller ones, don't have separate areas for all that, so they might be mixed together. And so that would be that mixed companion animal area, would be all animals were seen or housed in that area. I should mention something about reptiles here. Reptiles like birds and wildlife are often transient populations in animal shelters. They might come in and be transferred out somewhere else to someone who knows how to take care of them a little bit better because they have some specific husbandry issues. About 50% of our shelters took in reptiles. Some transferred them out, some kept them, and usually kept them in the mixed companion areas. But a few of the shelters had their own reptile wards that they kept them in. You'll see the importance of that later. So I ended up sampling 32 animal shelters. 428 samples were taken. This should say median annual intake and median annual animals on site. And this is just to give you an idea of the huge variety of shelters that I visited. Annual intake ranged from 13 animals all the way to 23,000. Median was 625. And the number of animals present at any one time ranged from 8 to 400. From the survey I did, I learned that about 60% of animal shelters warned their workers and volunteers of the risks of zoonotic disease, and I thought that was quite good, actually. About half of them have veterinarians on staff, about half do diagnostic testing for diarrhea, and I have to point out that 0% of them had ever tested for or diagnosed salmonella in a shelter animal. So, 9 out of the 32 shelters had environmental contamination with salmonella. That was 28% of them. 34 out of the 428 samples were positive. We identified 6 different salmonella serogroups, and we don't have the serotype information yet. The results go to the National Veterinary Services Lab, and that takes a month or more to get the results back, and we just don't have that yet. 31% of the samples were resistant to greater than 6 antibiotics, which I thought was a little high. And when an animal shelter was positive, it often wasn't just one location within the shelter. It ranged from 4% of the locations to 100% of the locations, but on the average, it was 22% of the shelter was positive. Some things that were not significant that we thought probably would be was the location within the shelter, you know, meaning the, was it an isolation room or was it a ward, adoptable ward. Also not significant was the shelter size or shelter type. What was significant? The species present in those rooms was significant. And I guess it's not surprising that the reptile area came out way on top, 66%. Small numbers. It was only 3 shelters that had specific wards for just that. Canine came out quite high, or next highest. Mixed companion, the next highest, and that would include reptiles as well that were sharing space with other animals. It's good to see that human areas were a lot lower, and wildlife seems to be the, in this study anyway, the lowest percent positive, but low numbers again there too. Another thing that was significant was the month of sampling. 42% of shelters that were tested in September were positive. And that kind of gels with what we find at our veterinary teaching hospital as well. It seems like the end of August to September, we get the most number of positives. And another thing that was significant was geographical location within the state of Colorado. And this is kind of a schematic drawing, but sorry about that. I'm lucky that Colorado is a rectangle, or it would have been even worse. So you can divide Colorado into the eastern third, which is called the Front Range, and this is flat, grassy plains area. And it butts up to the Rocky Mountains, and then the western slope is where the Rocky Mountains give way to the Red Rocks area and the mesas and the plateaus of western Colorado. And you can see the sampled shelters are the yellow dots, and the positive shelters have the red star on them. And the vast majority, 8 out of 9 of the positive shelters were on the Front Range. 85% of the population of Colorado also lives on the Front Range, too.
Had to go clear Durango.
Yeah, it was a terrible, really a hardship to to travel around the state. So what can we conclude? Environmental contamination does exist in Colorado animal shelters. 28% of them are positive, or I found positive in this study. Geographical location was another big problem. 44% of the shelters on the Front Range were positive. September is the highest month of prevalence. Higher risk species, not surprising, are reptiles. Canine was also up there a little. And the least to worry about is wildlife, it appears. Some things that I'm curious about, or questions that this raises for me, is I think that salmonella definitely now needs to be a differential diagnosis for animal shelters. Not all diarrhea is due to stress and diet change and parvo, which is kind of what they believe. I also wonder what the relationship of these positive samples is to human outbreaks or that salmonella-contaminated food of last summer. And we haven't done the PFGE analysis on it to do the DNA fingerprinting to find out how related they are. It'd be interesting if we can do that. I'm wondering how the level of antibiotic resistance compares to animals in the general population who have salmonella, you know, not in shelters, as well as to the human population. And they tend to throw a lot of antibiotics at shelter animals because of the conditions they live under, so might not be surprising that it's so high. Some people wonder if all environmental contamination is due to the shelter animals and might not be brought in, say, on the workers' shoes if they tend to work on a farm or a ranch. It'd be great to test the animals as well to be able to look at that. But I think the fact that our human areas ended up being so low, it might lend credence to the idea that it's actually the animals that are bringing it in and not the humans. We're going to be testing the samples for MRSA as well, which will be very interesting, I think, no matter which way that turns out. And a third part of this, my PhD project, is putting together and delivering a infection control and zoonotic disease awareness training to animal shelters in Colorado and surrounding states. And this information is really going to help me, also visiting the shelters and getting to know them and the work that they do and the working conditions that they have, I think will be really, really helpful for me to have gone through this. I have to thank the shelters that let me come because they're very brave, I think, because they let me come for no other reason than they wanted to find out and they wanted to do the best thing they could for their animals, so they wanted the information. My advisors and committee for letting me do my own thing. Diagnostic personnel lab who trained me to process these samples and were very, very patient. And then my fabulous daughter and Swiffering assistant, Ruby, who I have to say is, I'm very relieved, did not end up with another kitty after this summer. So that's it. And I don't know if we have time for questions or not.
I'm Anna Harding. I'm a professor of public health. So a very basic question, and then another question. Why are salmonella more prevalent in August and September?
I think it's the heat, the heat of summertime, and I'm not sure why else.
So that's just common knowledge, but nobody really knows why. Okay.
I think they probably do know why. I'm just not sure why.
And then, secondly, did you look at the conditions, the sanitation conditions of the cages and things like that? Did you take that into account when you were doing the sampling?
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there's cross-contamination from animals coming and leaving if they don't clean the shelters.
Oh, definitely. And in that survey, I asked questions about what their protocols were on cleaning and how often they cleaned, and I couldn't fit everything in here, and I haven't had a chance to really analyze that. I also asked questions about the disinfectants they used, and so it'll be really interesting to try to look at that and see how that falls out and if that has an effect. But the disinfectant use is sometimes so all over the board, it's just, it's hard to categorize it. And I had people mixing Simple Green with bleach with Dawn, and that was their protocol, and they would just throw it in there and clean, so a lot of different ways.
First here.
Yeah, next year here. I'm not sure. Yeah. And you what? I'm sorry.
And I'd like to have a copy.
Oh, good. Well, I'm being funded through Maddie's fund for that, and so I'm sure they will make it so they have it, and they maybe it'll be accessed through them. So, thank you.
Okay, Ron. One more question. Okay, we'll get more questions to end for the whole panel, and they'll probably just stick around 5-10 minutes.
Ron Hines, Long Beach Health Department. I didn't see, was there risk for the staff, and were there very many, was there human cases as a result of exposure to this? Or?
In any of the shelters that I looked at,
yes.
That is not something that I delved into in this one. I mean, and that would be very interesting to know, is to also go and either test the people or at least talk to them. It's hard because there's so much turnover in shelters of personnel that people come and go, but it would be really good to know that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Another person.